Welcome to Real Estate Investing for Women. On this show, you will learn how to create wealth through real estate the blissful way. That means with very little stress and very little time. We talk about strategies, mindset, heartset, money smarts, resources, and so much more to ensure you're able to create the success you most deeply desire. Now, here's your host, Monica Sawyer.
Today, I am so excited to welcome to the show Rachel Gainsborough. Rachel was born in Haiti with the drive to make a difference and not take her parents' sacrifices for granted. She was raised in Miami, worked hard, became a doctor, and was left with over $500,000 in student loans. So she grinded hard to pay off her loans. When she found Airbnb investing, it became a game changer for her, where she was able to make 15 times on short-term real estate rentals over long-term rentals. Now she's a healthcare professional by day and a rental investor by night. She's the owner and manager of 18 luxury short-term rentals with a lucrative cash-flowing rental portfolio. She's a mom, wife, and real estate coach that has recently been featured on Netflix TV, showcasing one of her luxury rentals. Rachel is passionate about helping professionals create a life they don't need a vacation from through Airbnb investing. I love that, Rachel. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Monica. Thank you for having me and for taking the time to put out all of this valuable content to the community. I so appreciate being here with you today.
Oh, thank you so much for that. Yes. And I have to tell you, Rachel, I've been kind of waiting for you, right? We've had to reschedule a couple of times. I do luxury home long-term rentals. I call them executive homes. And it's not often people talk about sort of the luxury rental market, right? I feel a little bit alone in that industry. So it's so much fun. It's so much fun to be having this conversation. I'm really excited about it. So could you just start by kind of giving us a high level of your story? I read your bio, but kind of like what brought you to real estate and why short-term rentals?
Yeah, so what brought me to real estate was looking for sort of not necessarily an exit strategy, but looking for an additional revenue stream outside of punching a clock and the whole W-2 thing. So I love helping patients. That is my passion. But outside of that, I wanted to have a savings set aside. We'd overcome a large amount of student loan debt. And when I looked around, I looked at all the investing strategies out there. Crypto was making its way to the forefront as well. I just didn't quite understand it. So I said, you know what? Let me just stick to real estate. I can see it. I can touch it. It's real to me. And so I went into look into real estate investing. I consumed maybe a year and a half of podcasts and determined that, you know what, short-term rentals was going to be the right fit for me because I felt that if I could position myself correctly and build a system around it, not only would I generate a significant amount of revenue compared to my counterparts that were investing in long-term rentals or syndications, I felt as though I would be able to do so in a fraction of the time that most would be doing investing, having a little bit of a project management background, being able to leverage that. I figured, you know what? I think it's worth a try. And the squeeze was worth the juice, or the juice is worth the squeeze, whatever the terminology is. But it worked in my favor for sure.
Awesome. So talk to me a little bit about short-term rentals versus long-term rentals, how you see them and why you chose this particular route.
Yeah. And I even niche further into luxury short-term rentals, but I will talk to you about short-term rentals versus long-term rentals. So, but fortunately, we live in a lower cost of living area in Georgia. So I was looking around at properties that would fit into my budget. And I think that first purchase, I was looking at a budget of about $300,000 for a property. And I looked at some long-term rentals in some rural or remote areas in Georgia. And I found a 20-unit, no kidding, a 20-unit for $300,000. I was like, oh my goodness, this is going to be amazing. So I did my due diligence. I did my research and I realized the rent rolls were about $160 a month. And I'm like, wait a minute, I want to live there. The rents were so low. And so with those lower rents, you are going to have challenges, right? So I had to think to myself, you know what? That's going to be 20 individuals who may be needier than most with these types of rents. Is it worth it for me? Am I leveraging my revenue in a way where I'm not punching a clock, or am I buying a whole new job? And so for me, at that point in time, even though it was long-term rental, which is going to be a little less hands-on than short-term rentals, it just wasn't worth it. So I looked around at more long-term rental opportunities, and I saw an average of anywhere from $300 to $400 a month. Net revenue after all expenses were paid, net operating incomes were not the greatest for long-term rentals. So I said, you know what? We'd spent so many years paying off student loan debt. I really wanted this next opportunity to be the most profitable as I could make it. And so short-term rentals was it for sure. And we saw anywhere from $10,000 a month gross revenue to start, and properties that could net about $6,000 a month is actually one of our first properties. We were thinking that would definitely be the route to go as compared to long-term rentals.
Ladies, before we get into the meat of this episode, let's have a quick word from our sponsor. If your idea of asset protection and tax mitigation is setting up a simple LLC and family trust structure, you could be leaving your business, real estate, and personal assets completely exposed. Imagine instead being able to take advantage of the bulletproof asset protection tools formerly reserved for the ultra wealthy. If you'd like to mitigate or eliminate your capital gains taxes while protecting your assets from predatory litigation, visit blissfulinvestor.com/trusts. That's plural. There, you will find out more in a free recording with the world's foremost expert on a new kind of trust structure you've probably never heard of. This is a true generational wealth building business and personal asset protection and tax mitigation structure dating back to the founding of our country and is still used today. Just go to blissfulinvestor.com/trusts to find out more. It's free.
So that's your profit, or is that before management fees?
That's profit, because we actually self-manage using our own systems, of course. And that was part of the project management I mentioned a little earlier.
Got it. And on one of the notes you sent me, I noticed it's not in my notes today, but you mentioned something about you can do this even if it's not like a vacation destination place. Could you talk a little bit about how that works for you?
Absolutely. And what's interesting is it's a strategy we stumbled across because we have a property that is in a suburban area. It's on a nice piece of land, about 2 acres or so, and which is huge, right? For some areas. And it's in a higher, I would say a better school district, a little bit of higher per capita income in this particular area. And we came across families who were displaced from their homes temporarily due to either a natural disaster or, you know, some type of mishap. So if there's a fire or a significant water leak, a pipe that burst, well, these are families that fit our demographic. We have larger homes, so we do host larger families. These are families who are going to be placed in a hotel for some time, and they need to be in a home for the next, I want to say, 4 months to 8 months. As you know, supply chain is behind. Finding workforce to repair homes can be a little bit delayed, and we're still encountering that. So those families have been staying with us anywhere from 4 months to 11 months. We just secured a 12-month contract with some of these families, and these are paid to us directly by the insurance company. So these are our midterm rentals, but it's specifically the insurance policyholder strategy that we leverage.
So do you get those people through the insurance companies? Is that actually, that's the channel that you use?
Yeah, they actually come to us through a third party. So the insurance companies themselves, they don't necessarily seek out housing, but they work through a third party to find housing for them, almost like a scout to find homes. And so once we had one book in our local area, it's always creating those relationships, right, Monica? We know those relationships are everything.
Yes.
So as soon as we start to evaluate the property, I guess notice to vacate period, and say, okay, this property is going to be vacant in a few weeks, we start reaching back out to those same individuals and say, hey, we just want to be top of mind. Don't forget, this property is going to be available January 2nd. We just got an inquiry today. We have one that's available January 2nd. It's a January 2nd. We're going to be open again. And so we keep those lines of communications going. So it's not necessarily your insurance, but it is a third party that works with Allstate or State Farm or Travelers, all of those insurance companies.
Interesting. How would you find those people?
The first time, honestly, they found our listing through Airbnb. As of this day, they don't use Airbnb anymore to source properties for their policyholders. However, the policyholders still use Airbnb. So it's kind of a two-pronged attack. So say you, Monica, something happens to your home, unfortunately, the insurance is going to use that third party to start looking for housing, but they may tell you, hey, you may want to look for an option as well. And if you determine, hey, there's this property that's an Airbnb that's within my school district, a few roads down or something like that, then you can go ahead and let them know that you found a property, and then they'll work with the host or the homeowner to facilitate that transaction. But I do know the insurance policy holders, the insurance temporary housing agencies are not leveraging Airbnb any longer. Another site that we use to garnish some of that relationship is actually a site called corporatehousingbyowner.com. So we list there and they have found us there as well.
Interesting. Do you find that you have much less vacancies? Like, what's your turnover time when someone leaves and then you're trying to get somebody else in? What does that look like?
Yeah. So I would say for our five properties in one particular region that does primarily this midterm rental strategy with the insurance policy holder, we've had 7 vacancy days over the last 9 months.
Nice.
Yeah. So usually I like to keep, if I'm going to do short-term rentals, like in a vacation market, I prefer a vacancy of 65%, honestly. That's going to be the biggest difference between short-term and long-term. Long-term, you want 100% occupancy. Short-term, you do not want 100% occupancy, especially with the larger homes. At 65% is my sweet spot because we're able to go in there and make all of the changes that we need, tweak things if the home needs a little bit more TLC. We have the time in between to adjust. However, with long-term rentals, you're going to have the same person in there long-term. So short-term rentals, there's a little bit more hand-holding. Our maintenance needs to come in. We pressure wash, all of those things. But if we drive up vacancy or occupancy with our short-term rentals, the struggle is that the property is not going to be in tip-top shape for the next guest. And if it's not in tip-top shape for the next guest, you risk complaints and refunds and you start to lose money at that point. Mm-hmm. So 65% occupancy is perfect. We're able to get a higher revenue and get the property in tip-top shape in between. However, for these midterm rentals, we can go all day long, 100%. It's perfect.
Got it. So with your short-term rentals, more like the vacation ones, you like 65% occupancy.
Yes.
Right? Okay. Yes. But with the other mm-hmm. ones, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah.
How do you manage these properties remotely?
So I use a number of technology tools, you know, automate, eliminate, delegate, right? So as far as remote management, if the property is close to other properties where I want to make sure that the noise levels are kept under wraps, we use tools such as Noise Aware inside of the properties that will measure the decibels to make sure that there are no crazy parties happening. Other tools are channel managers that we use online to deconflict our calendars to make sure that we don't get double booking. And the Ring camera, keyless door entry, those types of tools as well are primarily the automation or tech tools that we leverage. Outside of that, our cleaning team, our maintenance, as well as our TaskRabbit runners, they pretty much run the whole business for us remotely. And so if there's any types of boots on the ground that's needed, they're there to support and to assist and to like bridge any of those gaps. As far as guest communications, once we had our communications dialed in, created our SOPs, we were able to train someone to take over a lot of the guest communications. So it's really important to have a system, mm-hmm. you know?
What do you mean by SOP?
So our standard operating procedures.
Got it. Okay.
So yeah. So if a guest asks this question, here's the answer. If they ask this question, here's the answer. And so if something comes up that's not a part of the script or our SOP, then they didn't escalate it to me. So the last time I spoke with a guest, I want to say it's in maybe 9 months or so, or wow. I've had to intervene in like 9 months or so. So I'm primarily responsible for bookkeeping and making sure the numbers look okay.
Got it. And so your cleaning team and your handyman, do they come from TaskRabbit, or do you have somebody kind of on staff that you, not maybe on staff, like you're not paying them W-2, but people that right. you call when there's a need, or how does that work for you?
Yeah, so I have three sets of cleaners. So if something goes awry with the first, I have team B and team C. So team A, team B, team C. So I keep those at bay. And then there's an app called Turnover B&B. If something goes wrong with all three, there's an app called Turnover B&B for many of my clients who just, they don't have that to get started. That's a great place to start. So I like that tool as well. And the handyman, they come from various places. For instance, Thumbtack is an app that I like to use. What I like about Thumbtack, for better or for worse, I know it has some things there that people don't love. But what I do like about it is it has a reciprocal system where you can rate the handyman or the vendor. And so it's almost like we all have to be on our best behavior.
Got it.
If you say you're showing up, you show up. So you're not kind of left high and dry. And also I use another tool called Nextdoor. It's like a neighborhood tool to mm-hmm. see who's been suggested as handyman, like almost like locals, living like a local. The Nextdoor app is pretty cool as well.
Do you keep most of your properties close to you, or are they spread out? Like, how far is the farthest one?
So I'm in Georgia, so okay. I have some in the Poconos of Pennsylvania, but everything else is Georgia, Florida, Tennessee.
Okay, got it. Got it, got it, got it. I like this concept that you talk about, which is less is more, right? Mm-hmm. Keeping fewer doors, but still making the same kind of income. This is something that I've kind of touted a lot. Again, when you're in the luxury market or the executive home market, you can kind of see it, right? People have asked me many times, well, if you've got a vacancy, it's a much bigger deal than someone who has a lot more properties, which is true. But I'm like you, I keep my properties in the highest condition. So my vacancies are very short. I might have a vacancy of 1 to 4 weeks every 5 to 7 years, right? So it's very little. But could you talk to me a little bit about how you see that and what's your approach to that?
Yeah. And I think it's a very valid point, Monica, that people want to hedge and make sure that they're not putting themselves out there. So it does require being proactive, especially for short-term rentals and mid-term rentals. I mentioned a little bit earlier about the importance of marketing, right? Mm-hmm. And so we don't move forward without collecting at least email addresses from our guests. And so we have the mechanism by which to do so. And, you know, you want to make sure you're doing it all in the proper way. But with that being said, we add them to an email campaign and we'll send them an email once a month or once a quarter, just reminding them of how they were helped by being at our property. If they know someone who can maybe benefit from our property, for those who are staying with us for midterm rentals, or if it's a short-term rental, we remind them of what a great time they had at their birthday party at our property. And so collecting information such as the purpose of your visit, as well as who stayed with us, we can then market them as well. And so it's really important to be a little bit more proactive, and it's worth it because mm-hmm. you do have that higher touch that can allow you to demand the nightly rates that you desire.
Right. I love that. Talk to me a little bit about your sort of blue ocean strategy and how does that differentiate you? I mean, I don't even know what that means. Like, what do those words mean? So can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I forget which author coined that. So the red ocean is when you're in that feeding frenzy with all the other sharks. Properties, the sharks, and it's like everyone's going after the thing. Mm-hmm. And the blue ocean, it's a wide ocean and you're on your own. So you're almost like that unicorn. You don't want to be a me too. We call it like a me too drug. Like when you have another statin, it's like, why do we have an eighth statin on the market? You're like a me too drug. You don't want to be a me too, because when you're a me too, that's when you face oversaturation. That's when you face those types of issues. Whereas when you're unique, when you're set apart, when you have identified who you are as a host and who the guest avatar is, that's when you can have them see that you see them and they see your property and you're marketing to them. And it says, I see you, I know you. And whether or not you're priced a little bit higher than what they would expect, they're going to book with you because they know that, you know what, why hedge and stay over here when I know this particular property has everything that I need. Mm-hmm. And so that's the power of operating in the blue ocean. You're going to set yourself apart from the feeding frenzy or from the race to the bottom, really, because when individuals are similar to others, the only differentiator is price point. So I'm just going to keep dropping my price until I get there. Well, when you're operating the luxury, you're going to set yourself as a unique provider of hospitality, then you're not going to be like the others.
Got it. So for you, it's that you chose to niche into the luxury market. Is that how you did? Okay.
Yeah, awesome. Absolutely.
So knowing what you know now, if you were talking to somebody who was getting started, what would you tell them to do to get the fastest results?
Oh, I love that. So I would say just start, right? Just start. Because here's the deal. You can overanalyze your life away, really.
No
kidding.
So just
start. Yeah. Surround yourself with the right folks who are doing the thing that you're looking to do, who have achieved the goals that you're looking to achieve, and then just start.
Okay. Got it. What were some of the challenges that you had to overcome in starting this business?
Yeah. So some of the challenges, it's almost like you don't know what you don't know, right? Mm-hmm. So being in the right rooms and having those conversations and group learning, I think even listening to other people's situations, say, maybe I'm not going to do that. And so you just never know what will come out of you hearing what others are saying in a group setting. So attending the local RIAs and those kinds of things, because I think had I really engaged and just gone all in that group learn, I would have probably avoided some HOA situations that we had encountered. I would have not lost a whole lot of money on a deal due to not understanding some things with taxes. And so I don't love taxes, but I am laser focused on tax implications as well and tax opportunities as well.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. That was such an amazing amount of information and so quickly. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This is fun.
Yeah, it has been really fun. Thank you for that. So tell my audience how they can reach you. It sounds like you do some coaching and you help people get started in this business. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. And the best way to reach me is to grab my free list. I do have a free gift. Those who are always approaching me about short-term rentals, they say, where should I invest? So I have my top 75 cities for highest profitability for short-term rentals in the U.S. If you go to 75GEMS, that's 75GEMS.com, that's 75GEMS.com, you'll grab my list and I'll definitely have a little free training there and how to get in touch with me as well.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you. I'm going to download that. That's amazing. So Rachel, do you have things coming up in Extra, ladies? So I'm really excited. Rachel and I are going to be talking about financial wellness is wellness too. So ladies, you know how much I believe that your financial independence offers you choice. Choice offers you options. Options allow you to have happiness, right? Actually, it's kind of, it goes both ways. Financial independence gives you options. Options gives you choice and choice gives you happiness, right? So it goes both ways. But basically our financial wellness is a big indicator, or not indicator, but a big determinant in how much bliss we can feel. Now, I want to qualify that by just saying that you can be very blissful even if you're broke, right? I know that it's an inside job. You know that that's how I teach, what I teach and how I believe. But I will say that financial freedom makes it a lot easier. Any kind of pain that we experience in life makes it harder for us to focus on being blissful, right? It creates more challenges for us. So whether it's physical pain, mental pain, emotional pain, or financial pain, any of those kinds of pain are going to make being blissful a little bit harder. You're going to have to just work harder at it, right? So one of the bliss strategies is to help get past those pain, those kinds of pain. Self-care is really, really important, right? You want to take care of yourself. You want to take care of your emotional self. You want to make sure that you're feeding yourself right, exercising, all of those things in my book called Choose Bliss, right? But one of the pieces that's really, really important that people don't tend to back and they don't tend to talk about, but is really true, is financial pain needs to be handled. So we get to a point financially where it's not financial pain anymore. And then we could get to the next point where it can actually support our bliss by allowing us to do more for our families, more in the world, and just live a little bit more freely doing the things that we value most, right? So financial freedom is a really, really important piece of bliss. That's why I do this show. And so when Rachel was talking about financial wellness is wellness too, I was all in. So we're going to be talking about that and extra, and I'm super, super excited about that. So, but before we do that, Rachel, are you ready for our three rapid fire questions?
I'm ready.
Okay. The first one you kind of answered, so let's see what you come up with this time. But what is the super tip on getting started investing in real estate?
Ooh, be in the right rooms. I would say surround yourself with those who are doing what it is that you want to do. And that comes with everything too, Monica, right? Not only investing, but health and wellness, all the things. So be in the right rooms. Don't go at it alone.
Yeah, I love that. And then what is one strategy for being successful as a real estate investor?
Ooh, that's a great question. For me, it's measuring my goals. So you don't pay attention to what you don't measure. You pay attention to what you measure, right? So every month we're looking at our portfolio. We're assessing what we're doing well and what we're not doing so well. And so we make adjustments along the way.
Got it. And then what is a daily practice that you do, Rachel, that you would say contributes to your personal success?
For me, it's prioritizing. There's a lot of noise out there. And so first thing in the morning, I want to write down my top three and make sure that it aligns with my big rocks.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so if it does, then that's what I focus on, because there's a lot of noise. There are emails coming through. There's alerts on the phone, all the things. So focusing on my top three, determining what those are ahead of time, has been my daily habit that contributes to my success.
Oh, I love that one. Thank you. This has been so much fun, Rachel. Thank you so much for all you've contributed so far.
What an honor. Thank you so much for having me, Monica.
Yeah. And ladies, we have more in extra. We're going to be talking about financial wellness as wellness too. Yay. So if you are subscribed to extra, please stay tuned. If you're not, but would like to be, go to realestateinvestingforwomenextra.com and you can subscribe there. For those of you that are leaving Rachel and I now, thank you so much for joining us. I love hanging out with you ladies. Thank you so much. I so appreciate you. And until I see you next time, always remember, goals without action are just dreams. So get out there, take action, and create the life your heart deeply desires. I'll see you soon.
I hope you enjoyed today's show. If you'd like to find out more about how to become a blissful millionaire, go to blissfulinvestor.com. See you next time.